Rave Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of AV Insider. Today, I'll be talking with my friend Utz Baldwin of Plum, which is formerly UB, and he is the CEO of the company, and we will have him on just 1 second. We'll also be mentioning a few topics, not necessarily my favorite word, but it's something that's out there, and if you're a little confused on it, we'll cover it today. It's the Internet of Things. First of all, I want to mention mention my sponsors, like I always do. If you're doing commercial integration and or automation, Hypersign, if you go to hypersign.com, they have a whole army of digital signage solutions. So if you just go to www.hypersign.com, you can check them out and see everything that they have to offer. For the rest of us that are just doing audio, video, all the racks and all the speakers and mic stands and everything else in between, if you go to atlassound.com, you can find all that stuff that I just mentioned there on their website and continue on selling the products that we'll be talking about. As I mentioned, today I have Utz Baldwin, the CEO of now Plum. Hello, Utz. Thank you for being on the show.
Hey, Johnny. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm well. Thanks for making time today. For anyone that does know, I had him on the show. Well, actually, not this show. Another show a while back. And back then, you were a company called UB, correct?
That's right, UB.
UB. And at that time, you were just, well, kind of just starting this new startup, which is very rapidly becoming one of my favorite startups. You guys are based out of Austin, Texas. And you are also formerly the CEO of Cedia, correct?
That's correct.
Yeah, and for everyone that doesn't know, Cedia is one of the most highly attended AV shows out there, especially for Resi. If you guys are Resi guys like myself, CDA stands for Custom Electronic Design Installation Association. And if you don't go, you should check it out. I mean, it's a pretty big thing. You can see all these other companies we're talking about. But today we're talking about the Internet of Things, and we're talking about Plum. Could you give me a little rundown on the company and just kind of a general? You guys are a startup out of Austin. You have a few products that aren't quite on the market yet, but I heard you had a little bit of success on Kickstarter getting these ideas off the ground.
Yeah, thanks, Johnny. We're having a great time. Obviously, running a startup can be quite bipolar. You've got good days and bad days, but we're really having a great time because we get to innovate, really, you know, challenge status quo and reimagine how we interact with the technology around us. So we've made a lot of strides in a fairly short period of time. We started the company about the summer of 2012. My partner Glenn Burchers and I, put in some seed capital and decided to build a couple of prototypes and some software. And we took the company out to demo in Silicon Valley back in October of 2012. Huge launch event. You know, companies like E-Trade, TiVo, a host of others got their start out there. And the Texas boys walked into Silicon Valley with our hardware and our mobile app and beat out 77 other technology startups to win the People's Choice Award, which was pretty cool because we got to, you know, stand on stage holding a huge check from IDG Media for $1 million. And it was quite surreal. But most importantly for us as a company, it was really our first true validation point that the VCs, the venture capitalists, and the tech press that were in attendance believed we were onto something. And that's when we decided to, you know, move full force ahead. So prior to leaving Cedia, we commissioned a study called the Size and Scope of the Connected Home Industry. And it was really to determine, you know, how big the Cedia market was in general, right? What subsystems were being sold, what percentage of revenue, how many tax dollars we represented, how many votes we represented for legislative work. And we determined at the time, it was, you know, late 2012 when the study was released, and it was about a $14 billion market today, which is pretty darn sizable. You know, not a huge compounded annual growth rate because the systems, everybody in the industry knows that they're really made for the one percenters, people living in homes with a value greater than, you know, $1 million. And nobody's been really successful in crossing the chasm, right, to reach the mass audience for connected home devices. And until a little company called Nest launched about 2 years ago, and they took a very small sliver of the connected home industry called environmental controls and exploded it. And I think everybody that's listening has probably heard the news about their exit to Google. It was a huge return for their investors, a big win for the connected home industry. I think they put this the wind in everybody's sails.
Definitely.
But I think the most interesting thing about Nest as a company, certainly they, you know, they are quite a unique organization. They have a rock star CEO and Tony Fadell, you know, the father of the iPod and great industrial design user experience. But they're no longer competing for consumers looking for a home automation thermostat. They are now competing for people just looking for a thermostat. Even at the price point of $250, they were capturing consumers that just thought that being able to control your thermostat remotely and to manage your energy a little bit better was compelling enough to spend $250 on, when you know the closest competitor for a smart thermostat was around $100. Sonos is another great example, right? A very specific use case, great user experience, clearly expanded the TAM for the distributed audio market, disrupted that market. And they're doing gangbusters as well.
Yeah, they not to cut you short, but they just recently acquired one of the VPs over at Microsoft on the Xbox over there. So that's a huge step for Sonos as well.
Yeah, so I know that they have big plans as well to continue to expand and grow. So we really took a look as a company, we took a look at the third most popular subsystem in the connected home space today, and that's lighting control and energy management. And if you think about it, lighting has more utility than any other subsystem in your home. You interact with your lights dozens, if not hundreds of times every single day. There are more endpoints for lighting products in your home, right? Typically, Nest sells about 1.2 thermostats per home. But, you know, the average home, a 3,000 square foot home, has, you know, 30 to 40 light switches throughout. And so the opportunity is great. There are over a billion light switches in the U.S. alone. So it was an opportunity that we just couldn't ignore. And we wanted to completely reimagine the light switch. In fact, the product that we're launching is, we're not even calling it a switch or a dimmer. We call it a light pad. That's because it does so much more. The technology behind it is quite innovative. It's the first Wi-Fi smart dimmer that allows you to control your lights directly from your smartphone, you know, while you're at home or away. So it'll work over a wide area network through a server, similarly to the way a Nest thermostat operates.
So, having that said, does that mean that it's going to require like you know, with not Nest, like say Philips Hue, for example, back into the Internet of Things, that talks wireless or uses a Wi-Fi protocol that talks over to a little hub that's then now connected IP, so that it's on your system, and then that's how you would essentially talk to it via the app.
Yeah, I think Wi-Fi is the only similarity to of Plum devices to others on the market. So I've got to take a step back in time, I guess, and you know, talk a little bit more about my background. I've been in the connected home, the custom installation industry my entire career. I started crawling underneath houses, pulling wire as a teenager, you know, to pay my way through school. I've programmed, I've, you know, laced racks, I've sold, I've, you know, run a company. I was an integrator in Texas, where we designed and installed, you know, thousands of sophisticated control systems. I know the space, and I realize that, you know, for the past two decades, it's really been required that there be some central controller in the house. And for large estate homes, I think that's still the case. There's no question that the processing power that's required to manage interoperability and conditional events and, you know, all of the disparate systems in the home, that you do still need that type of horsepower. But things are changing, and the intelligence, adding to intelligence and connectivity to a device today, is less than $10, right? The semiconductor microcontroller companies and the manufacturers of Wi-Fi solutions are all experiencing consolidation, and the prices are coming down. And we believe that creating a hub or a gateway of sorts is not only restricting the potential TAM, the total available market, because it adds complexity to a consumer. We wanted to prove real machine-to-machine communication, M2M, because that's what the Internet of Things is all about. So if you order one of our light pads or 40 of our light pads, you require no gateway. The devices communicate directly with one another over your local area network.
Hmm.
And we also happen to include BLE, Bluetooth Low Energy, as a redundant radio, as well as for several other reasons that I can explain as well. But we believe that creating a hub or a master controller or a gateway was solving a problem or creating a solution for today's problems. But we already know that every home in North America that we're targeting already has that gateway. It's called your router, and most of them already have Wi-Fi embedded.
Right. Pretty common.
Yeah.
So if we buy, like you said, one of your dimmers, or as you're calling it, a light pad, which I'll ask you why in just 1 second, or like you said, you know, some homes can have 100 plus lights easily. They're all able to talk to each other wirelessly.
Correct.
And then I can all control all of these from one app on my phone?
That's correct.
Or tablet or whatever?
Absolutely. So most importantly, in order for us to truly cross the chasm, right, and reach a broader audience, it all had to be about the user experience. And in my, you know, 20, 25 plus years installing systems, I realized that adding complexity to a system creates frustration, and that leads to abandonment, right? If a consumer experiences frustration with a technology, they're most likely to simply abandon it, and they certainly won't promote it or be an advocate for it. So we knew that setting up our device had to be, and our mantra is to make it as easy as sending or receiving a text message. So when you install one of our light pads, you only need to answer two questions. What room is it in? Living room, dining room, et cetera, and what would you like to call it? Is it an art light, a down light, a chandelier? Mm. From there, you're off to the races. You don't need to switch the radio on your phone to join an infrastructure mode or ad hoc network. All the credentials are passed using Bluetooth Low Energy over a back channel. So the user only experiences the part of the setup that really matters to them. You know, where is it located, and what would you like to call the device? The device also, the light pad also features, it detects motion, and when you approach it at night, it will gently illuminate, so you can easily find it in the dark. But that illumination, we're using both a white LED, but also an RGB, tricolor LED.
Okay.
And because this is essentially an IP-based user interface located in every room of your home that happens to be connected to the internet, we can provide notifications. One example might be if you create – we'll have an if channel when we launch. So you could create conditionals that say, if there's a tornado warning, I want my light pads in the house to flash red, indicating you know, severe weather. Or – I know you, for instance, Johnny, are a huge social media hound. You've got tons of followers, and I'm sure you'd like to know when somebody mentions you. So if somebody mentions your Twitter handle, we can have your light pads flash blue just to let you know that somebody has mentioned you in a tweet. That's because we're essentially, you know, an internet device located in every room.
Let me just stop you really quick. For those of you that didn't catch what that was, you said the if channel or which is essentially, if you go to ifttt.com, it stands for if then, or if this, then that. So like you said, you know, if someone tweets me online, for example, my light pad will now notify me if that's what I wanted to do. Or it's connected to all these other online things, and their slogan is put the internet to work for you. And Plum has their own channel, which is kind of cool if you use it correctly.
Yeah, if you haven't set up an IFT account, I highly recommend you do it. It's very, very cool. Very great and simple user interface. You can walk through and create a rule within 2 seconds so that if, you know, if there's bad weather, you get an email alert or your hue lights can flash. And there are a slew of channels that you can choose from.
Right, and to tie into the whole Internet of Things, like you said, a Hue channel, and I believe there might be one for Nest and a few other internet-connected devices, like Plum, for example. So having all these things talk to each other and making them work for you takes a lot more time off of you having to go switch things on and off, monitor things like that. It kind of doing the work for you.
Yeah. So that's simply the notification feedback. Now I think one of the coolest parts about the LightPad is that we moved away from a physical button and we're using a capacitive multi-touch user interface. It's the same user interface you have on your smartphone, right? Where you can use single finger, two finger, pinch, and draw multiple gestures to have things happen. So when you walk up to one of our light pads, you can simply slide your finger up and down to adjust the light. That's kind of a no-brainer. Everybody would expect that
Sure.
to happen. But when you use two fingers, you adjust the other light pads located in the same room. So you're actually, you're adjusting multiple switch legs from one device. So you can quickly set a mood, or increase the intensity of all the lights in a given room.
Okay.
And then when you're walking out the door, all you have to do is use the pinching gesture, and all of the Plum light pads in the house will turn off. So you don't have to reach for the client, meaning your smartphone, to turn off all the lights before you go to bed, or as you're walking out the door, a simple pinch will do that for you. And again, keep in mind, there's no other hardware or software interaction. These devices are communicating with each other directly, over your local area network.
When I last talked to you, you said this is kind of an open API thing, so like I, the integrator or the homeowner essentially, would be able to kind of tweak with it on their own and add their own little things here and there to at some point.
Yeah, as a company, we believe in an open Internet of Things. That's the only way it will work.
Okay.
I think companies that create closed ecosystems and try to own the customer will ultimately lose. You have to open up your device, the functionality, certainly not the firmware. You know, we're not going to open up the firmware so you can fool with a dimmer. I mean, we're dealing with
Right.
with an electrical device that could potentially burn your house
Burn our
down.
house down,
So.
yeah.
But all the functionality of the light pad, being able to sense gestures, so you can use this as an input device, you can send commands to it. So any third-party controller or software that can send or receive commands over IP, so Control4, Crestron, AMX, Savant, HAI, SmartThings, Revolve, Almond Plus, the list goes on. Any one of those products can not only control our device, but because of our advanced gestures, you can use our device as an input device for those products as well.
Does that mean you mentioned Revolve? Have you already been talked with the company?
Oh, absolutely. Revolve is also a Techstars company. We went through the Techstars accelerator.
Okay.
They've got a great little platform that they've built.
Yeah.
I think SmartThings is another one there. I think the guys at SmartThings are looking at it a little bit more from a developer community, right? Because you can create your own apps for their platform.
Okay.
But I consider Revolve, SmartThings, August Lock, Goji Lock. This is the new breed of connected home companies,
Right.
and I'm sure you will see a lot more of them. And in fact, I received the same email I think a lot of integrators did. Revolve offering a dealer program for integrators, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, I think so too. I did not receive that email, so I'm going to find that online. Because I was thinking that the other day, I'm like, I wonder if, this is open up to dealers, or if this is just like a, a direct you buy online at Amazon or wherever. And then from there, the homeowner just figures it out. Because their thing is that they can they say that they control all these kind of subsystems, like you said, where it's Sonos, Hue. I didn't know if they did Nest yet or not. I know that they Nest had talked about opening up the API for us integrators to control it. So I'm sure if it's not there, that at some point it will be.
I think they already do. They did before
Okay.
the official announcement, but obviously at CEDIA Expo, Tony Fadell announced their open API program, which was, again, a really good move on their part. You can't create a product that's not going to be adopted by the integration market, right? The CD channel will always be important for innovation because, you know, affluent Americans are not only not going to install products themselves, but any new device quite often needs a little bit more handholding, any new technology. So I think it's important. That's why we're publishing the API. So integrators, you know, if you're putting in a media system and you've got a control four system, something very simple controlling an audio video rack, and the consumer wants one smart light switch, you could easily add, you know, one device without having to buy some other central controller or bridge. And the fact that you can use our device for other things as a user interface, I think also adds a great deal of value.
Definitely. A few more questions regard to your light pad. So at this point, is it a single dimmer or are there going to be multiple dimmers, like one that's going to handle like an ELV load or a magnetic load or incandescent or CFL / LED, or is it like a universal style where it's all in one?
Yeah, it's adaptive, so it's all in one. It'll handle just about any light source. Obviously, by the time we ship, we'll have a list of tested light sources.
Okay.
Obviously, we wanted to make it very simple. One SKU, it can be used in a three-way or a multi-way scenario. And very simple.
Yeah, definitely. Instead of having to make sure you purchase the correct one for that type of load, and
that's right. There's no master, no slave.
Yeah,
you buy one. You buy one. You buy 40, and they all work. They all work the same.
And then in regards to the multi-touch aspect, like where you said, like one finger slide can up and down, or two, or pinch to zoom. Can it? How many points of touch is capable on this? Will it accept?
You name it. We're really? You know, on our bench, we're already parsing just about any gesture. So,
interesting.
Because our device is an open Internet of Things, IP-based user interface, it just so happens to be mounted to a triac, to a dimmer.
Okay.
Draw a number two, and you create a scene. Maybe it's a party scene for your house, and it sets all your lights. But simultaneously, our light pad can send a string to your Sonos music system and start a playlist. Again, there's no other hardware involved. It's directly from our light pad to a third-party IP-based device. The same holds true for controlling a thermostat. If you're walking out your door, you can draw the letter A on a light pad to put your lights in away mode, and they begin, you know, turning on and off randomly at dark to make it appear as if somebody's home. But at the same time, we send a string to the Nest thermostat to force that into away mode so that it immediately goes into away mode rather than waiting 30 minutes for the motion detector to time out.
So here's a kind of a simple question, I think, maybe, in my head. But so you draw an A, you know, for away, you draw a 2 for, you know, like scene 2 kind of a thing, and it starts doing all these things. On the light pad itself, it's probably not going to show you what you've drawn last. So as if you walk away, you know, it's still be a capacitive light pad. Will it give you some sort of feedback on the app to let you know in this room you've activated scene X or something like that?
Certainly, our app provides full feedback, right, of the condition of the light pad. So if you activate a scene, you'll get feedback within the app.
Yeah, because I could see how that could be confusing. Like you said, you know, some people are, you know, seriously have hundreds of loads in their house, and these things could add up. I've done homes for like the CEO or ex-CEO of Pete's Coffee, one of my favorite coffee companies, and the architect who did his place decided not to do keypads, but instead just stacks of switches everywhere, and had shades everywhere, and everywhere in his home. Instead of having things nicely labeled and less clutter, there's post-it notes all over these switches, and there's like stacks of seven gangs everywhere, and like that's just how he lives, and it's very confusing. So that being said, with just one, you know, you start doing different scenes, a two, an A, all this stuff. How do you remember that's there?
So keep in mind also the fact that we've got a tri-colored LED light ring around our
Yeah, that's right.
It can glow any color you want. So if you, you know, want, if you'd like the light pad to glow a certain color based on a particular scene, you can. Or I mentioned, you know, activating a playlist on your Sonos.
Right.
What about adjusting the volume for your Sonos?
Sure.
Well, with a simple swipe to the left or right, we could have the light pad glow green to indicate now you're controlling volume for that room.
Yeah.
And now when you swipe your finger up and down, it's adjusting the volume for the Sonos zone. And then you simply swipe back to the right, get a white LED, you know, white light to indicate you're back in lighting. And of course, those types of features aren't going to be for everyone.
No, not at all.
But the fact that it's available and that it has the power to be able to do those things, I think is, you know, quite compelling and quite profound.
I could see, let's just say, you know, in 10 years, I could see that kind of stuff being more common at the keypad versus at the app where that's giving you that that feedback. At the keypad in 10 years, you know, I could see it more common for, you know, like, you know, mom and pop to be down at their light switch on the light pad and just, you know, just easily, or the, you know, the kids growing up now having this in their home and just be like second nature. I'm like, oh yeah, you have to, you know, pinch to zoom on your lights. Or if you want to scroll over to Sonos, you got to, you know, draw two, enter that mode and then scroll over and just have it being second nature. Like they're texting on their phone and not looking, sort of a thing.
Yeah. You have, it's like being a power user on a smartphone, you know, in certain apps, there are ways to navigate through an app, and then you discover new ways that you can get things done. It might be through, you know, a press and hold or a swipe, but once you become comfortable with them, you're right, it becomes second nature.
Sure, yeah. So it's got a little RGB spectrum, a little ring of LED on this thing for notifications. It's an open API, and I can do multi-touch, and it sounds like pretty much as I can fit on there. And the reason I'm asking all these questions, you know, asking about, you know, drawing a 2 and the A and all that stuff, at some point, on a larger scale, like how would I go about, like, if I wanted to control all, you know, like for example, when I leave my place at work, it's an 8,000 square foot facility and it's just a button that's engraved, then it just says building off. And that goes back to turning off all the TV, shades closed, all the lighting loads and things like that. But for something as simple as just all the lighting loads, or remembering, you know, what I turned off, how would I go about that? Because, you know, there's going to be no button, there's no keypad. It's just a simple capacitive decor style light pad dimmer.
Mm-hmm. So by default, when you walk, you know, walk out the door and you pinch, it will turn off all the lights, and you can change which light pads act in that manner. So it could be the one next to your bed. So, mm-hmm. you know, a pinch next to your bed turns off all the lights in your home, or, you know, goes to a particular, you know, night scene. You can override these types of gestures, but by default, you know, single finger adjusts the load, two fingers adjust the other lights that are associated in the same room, and a pinch turns off all the light pads, you know, gradually. And of course, you can always pull your smartphone out and control everything from there as well. Scenes, fade rates, you know, what color you want the backlight to default on, how long you want it to stay on based on the motion sensor, the occupancy detector. Not to mention, the device also has sub-metering built into it, so we can tell you exactly how much your lights cost to operate in real time.
Okay.
And we can tell you that you have a light bulb out. So from the mobile app, you're going to get a lot more information than you would, you know, directly at the light pad.
And is the mobile app on iOS and Android, or is it just one right now and it'll move to the other?
No, it'll be both. When the product ships, we will have both iOS and Android fully functioning.
Well, you have one step up on Revolve, who claims to speak one language even though they only have one language app.
Yeah.
Speaking of when you launch, one is, so I know you guys had some success with the Kickstarter backing and funding. What, for just this one product we're speaking of, because you have a few other I want to get into in a minute, the light pad, when do you expect to ship those out?
So when we first launched, I guess the short answer to your question is late summer. We plan on fulfilling all back orders by September.
Okay.
You know, we did have an earlier date on our Kickstarter campaign, it's unfortunate that we couldn't deliver it within that time frame, and there are a few reasons that didn't occur. One, we made a business decision to change how we were going to get this thing built. Originally, as a young startup, our idea was that we would partner with an ODM that would handle a lot of the NRE, the engineering costs and mechanical designs and so forth. So we decided to bring all that talent in-house. And that's when we opted to go raise, additional financing and hire a great team and build this thing from the ground up internally.
Okay.
And then we contracted with a contract manufacturer that will, build the devices for us based on our design. And it's the right way to produce a product. You have much more control over the user experience, the quality of the product, and making sure that when we do launch, it does everything that we had, designed into the product. So the first few, our manufacturing will begin here in the States. We're actually going to manufacture it here. We do have a plan to go to a low-cost region after we prove the product out. But what's most important to the company, our priorities are user experience. That has to be number one, that when people interact with us on our website, when they order their product, when they receive their product, when they open the box, when they install it, provision it, and use it, that it is, nothing short of spectacular. Our goal is to best nest, to be quite frank.
Yeah, Plum will most likely be the next phase of what I already think that, the Google's reasoning for buying Nest is like 2 years ago, I think, during the Google I/O, they announced what was called Android at Home, which is kind of like the Internet of Things for consumer level automation via Google. Then Nest came out and changed the way, like I said, thermostats work, the design, the flow, the way it works, it's smart. But then they bought them, which was smart on their end. And I think that was their next kind of step into the Android at Home project, because since that Google I/O, that when they announced it, we saw, they could control light and I think one other thing, which I can't remember. But that was it, and then there was nothing. So will your company be the next sort of Nest success on that level of things? And
well, it's a great question, and obviously I'm going to be a little biased and say yes.
Yes, I hope so.
There's no question.
Right. Well, no, I mean, I like you said, I lighting it is a big thing. Everyone does. I will say that, some people who have never dimmed any lighting loads are still kind of like biased, like, oh, I just need a switch, that's it. And Title 24 here in California requires that I have a couple aux sensors and vacancy sensors for certain areas, that's it. I don't, why would I ever dim anything? And then I sell them on something, like a dimmer or something, and then they're like, oh wow, how was I living without this? Plus, especially since you're saving power and essentially money. So this being the next evolution of a dimmer, and most people, I would say almost 100% of the people listening have at least one smart device, whether it's a smartphone, tablet, or both. So with all these things that people can just go buy, it's a Nest, a Sonos, all these things, Plum soon. It's great that they're able to control all these things and essentially connect them all together with like companies like Revolve and others. But now it sounds like we could just use your answer that question. Would we have to use a third party company to do that integration? Like we're talking about through some sort of automation company to control Sonos and things like that. The control end is just talking to your devices. And then you're using the light pad to control like Sonos or
whoever. That's a really good question. We're not advertising or intending that our light pad can be the the bridge or gateway between all of these different connected devices. Obviously, if we had released the product with an active screen, mm-hmm. Rather than just a blank cap touch, then maybe that's a different story. No, for full-featured integration, you've got to be able to access more controls. The idea behind our LightPad controlling other things is for very simple, basic controls, right? You look out your front door, you see that your grass is turning brown, you can gesture a W on the LightPad at the front door, and it will send a packet to your Greenbox irrigation system and start your sprinklers. It's not going to provide, you know, full control of your Nest thermostat because it doesn't have enough feedback or notification to provide that.
Yeah.
So it's designed to really just simplify basic interoperability.
Okay.
Because everybody's got light switches in, you know, their dining room, and why, you know, wouldn't it be great if when you set a scene, it'll automatically start a playlist as well if you had it available at your fingertips.
Exactly. Yeah. And like I said, I think in a few years, you know, that's going to be more and more asked for with all these, like I said, all these startups and companies and the Internet of Things taking over and being more common. Yeah, why wouldn't you want to do that?
Yeah.
Especially with all the devices that are coming out now. I want to take a break really quick and thank our sponsors one more time. Commercial integrators, seriously, if you're not doing digital signage, I don't know what you're doing. You're doing wrong. You should go and check out our friends over at Hypersign. Go to hypersign.com, and they have a whole army of products that you can check out and start getting into that if you're not doing it already. I was not doing it for a while. That wasn't really my thing. I was doing Resi almost nonstop, and I'm doing a little bit of that now as well. I was also just doing, like I said, Resi, so everything else, speakers and amps and racks and all good stuff. My friends over at Atlas Sound provide all that equipment, and you can check them out at atlassound.com. We talked about the light pad, which is just one, like the main product or the first product we had initially, the company had talked about. But you have two other products, to my knowledge, very similar to each other, which is your smart outlets and smart plugs. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct.
And can you give me a little rundown on how those differ other than one looks like it just would plug into an existing outlet, and the other one is a dedicated outlet that you would just hardwire.
That's correct. First, we wanted to make sure that we can address lighting control as a whole, right?
Yeah.
And that's being able to adjust down lights or wall sconces, things that you have light switches for. But every home has table lamps, and being able to control those requires, you know, something at the electrical outlet if it's not, you know, some type of a smart bulb. So we opted to create the two other products that are essentially the same platform, right? They're using the same processing board, the same communication stack. We're just having to change the plastics, the tooling,
okay,
as well as some of the high voltage components. So our smart plug is a little bit unique compared to other smart plugs. There are a ton of them out on the market already, you know, Zigbee solutions, Z-Wave solutions. And most of them just switch on and off. We've incorporated dimming technology as well.
Oh, wow.
So you can dim a table lamp, or you can have a small appliance plugged into it. So your teenage daughter has her curling iron plugged into it, and I always use that analogy because I have a teenage daughter who leaves her curling iron plugged into it.
If she's listening, she'll learn a lesson.
Yeah, that's right. And she runs out of the house because she's late for school. So we can use geofencing and turn the smart plug off, knowing that she's left, so that not only does she not burn the house down, but, you know, we're using less electricity because we've turned the device off. It also incorporates the submetering, so we can tell you how much that, you know, small device or that lamp costs to operate as well. And then the smart electrical outlet we also think is quite unique because it allows you to turn on and off each receptacle independently. You're essentially just replacing the duplex in your wall.
Right.
So each outlet can be turned on and off independently, but we're also measuring the current draw of each outlet independently. And now energy management becomes certainly more relevant, right? I think you would have to agree that your lighting spend, your spend on lighting is only about 10% of your overall usage, right? The number one culprit is your HVAC system, your air conditioning. But number two are your white goods, the appliances in the home. So if you have your washing machine plugged into our electrical outlet and you start a load of laundry at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, we can sense that, send you a reminder or push notification that says, hey, Johnny, if you wait until 6:30, we can save you $1.10 on that load of laundry. That makes it actionable, right? It's significant at that point. And I think we're one of the only companies that is truly, truly has the ability to change behavior based on real-time feedback. The biggest problem with energy management in homes today and smart grid deployment and trying to get consumers to really understand what it's all about is making it granular, right? Today, you can buy a hand device, which is essentially a display that you put in your home that communicates with your smart meter that tells you how much energy you're using as a whole. No different than walking out and looking at your meter. But if you wanted to really figure out where that's being spent, you've got to open up a spreadsheet, you've got to run through your house, unplug things, go back and compare, take notes, and create this big spreadsheet to try to figure out, you know, where you're spending your money. I'm able to send you a push notification that says, hey, Johnny, your kitchen lights are costing you 10% more this month over last month. Would you like some help? And so the next time you go into the kitchen and try to turn your lights on to 100%, we simply govern the light pad at 90%. You can't discern the difference between the two. We help make up the difference. That's not only actionable, but we can monetize it, right? We can actually tell you exactly how much you could save,
right?
And report that back to you. And not even Nest is able to do that today because they're not measuring current draw. They're just measuring how long your air conditioner is on, mm-hmm. and they throw you a leaf.
Questions. Okay. Questions regarding the smart plug and the smart outlet. Do they both have that little RGB LED ring around them?
The electrical outlet will, and it also will have occupancy detection. And we didn't do it.
Interesting.
We didn't do it to detect motion in the room. We actually did it for a very, you might call it trivial, but I think it's important. Everybody's tried to plug something in behind a piece of furniture, and you're feeling the prongs because it's dark. You can't find the plug.
Yeah.
With ours, as you approach the outlet with something in the dark, it'll illuminate, so you can easily find it and plug it in. It's just simple, you know. Little things that really matter.
Yeah. Okay. That's actually really cool. I thought you were going to say like it turned off power, so you don't put your hand on the prongs and shock yourself.
Well, you can do that too, because if you know you've got childproof covers.
Yeah.
If you force the device off from your mobile app, you can have it glow red, just so that anybody that approaches it knows it has no power, right? Mm. And it's not going to hurt anybody. There are a ton of things you can do with the notification, but that's just one example.
With those notifications, those are all things that the end user or homeowner or whoever buys these products can set themselves, aside from having the app do push notifications and give suggestions?
Absolutely. Yeah, fully configurable.
You mentioned that the smart plug is dimmable, so if I want to plug a table lamp in and things like that, it will be able to dim from, I would assume, from the app?
That's correct, from the app.
What about the actual the outlet?
Right now we're providing for an on-off from the device itself.
The switch, okay. Now, going back to the smart plug that has the dimming capabilities, is there a way... I guess the user would have to say it, but is there a way, like, for example, Lutron has this little, I'm assuming it's their proprietary thing, it's a dimmer for a table lamp that you plug into the wall, and it's got this little notch on it so that you can't just plug in any old plug for a non-dim load. Like, so if you want, for example, like you said, you plug in your microwave and try and dim that, it's going to be really, really bad. Or something that's not a non-dim load. Is there a way for it to detect something like that, or you to say, don't dim this. It's obviously not a non-dim load. Some people may not know that you can't do that, but to prevent something from burning out or something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, actually, the light pad too has the same kind of fail safe, right? By default, when you set it up, it's going to be a switch.
Okay.
We can also detect the load and load type. So Now, we don't necessarily know if it's, you know, a dimmable LED versus an LED.
Right.
But you'll be able to set it up in software when you set the device up. But by default, it will be a switch, and we'll obviously warn consumers when they're setting it up that it's designed for dimmable loads.
When we know that later towards the summer is when we expect the light pad, what about the smart plug and smart outlet?
They'll trail by a quarter.
Okay. So, like first quarter-ish of next year, perhaps?
That's correct.
Okay. And then what about colors? For the light pad, I would assume it only comes in white or a clearish capacitive screen or touchpad. What about the smart outlet and the smart plug? Will they come in multiple colors or a simple white?
We will. We will. We're not. We're not going to ship multiple colors out of the gate.
Right.
We chose white because it's certainly the most common today.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want to get into the plate business, and we didn't want to make a billion SKUs. So we are working with our industrial designers and our mechanical engineers on ways that we can quickly and easily change. Change the element, right? The opening, the cover,
mm-hmm.
To make it, to easily make it a different color.
Can we expect any sort of USB outlet system from Plum?
Well, we've had a lot of requests for that. And it's, put it this way, the team's talking about it.
Okay.
It does seem to make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm. There are a few other ones out there, that's why I would assume other people have asked you.
Since that's right.
Kind of the product SKU that it would fit in line with these.
We are, our first priority is changing the way you interact with the device.
Yeah.
And we're putting, there's a lot of technology in these things, right? Submetering.
Yeah.
Passive infrared. We're using a microprocessor with significant memory to... so the schedules are stored locally. So if you lose internet connectivity, they still function. If you lose Wi-Fi connectivity, they're still functioning. They're designed to work and work well. And so, we're packaging a lot into a very small device. And I'm happy to say that we're, the form factor, we're not the deepest box. In fact, we're pretty proud of the space that we've been able to save inside, because we're really leveraging technologies from the mobile industry, which are clearly coming way down in size, and we're happy with the overall form factor. You're not going to have a space issue in the wall box putting these things in.
You mean as far as like depth and things like that?
Yeah, there are other light switches out there that, using radios and, have some microcontroller in them that just seem to be ridiculously deep.
Here's another question in regards to the light pad. Like when you take standard dimmers and things like that and you start stacking them together, you have to derate them. So from, say, mm-hmm. 600 watts down to 400, et cetera, et cetera. What is one of your light pads rated for, and if you stack them together or gang them together, do you have to derate them or something like that?
The good thing about ours is we don't have to derate it. We've got a pretty innovative heat dissipation process, and so there's no reason to break anything. It's one form factor. It'll install in a multi-gang. I think for the record, it is a 600 watt dimmer.
Okay.
But we are still testing beyond that. The dimmer's capable of more, but we want to be conservative with it, with its rating publicly.
Sure. So. Sure. Yeah. So could possibly maybe go up to 1,000 watts later. Or
it won't be 1,000, but it could ship at 800.
Okay, that's good to know. But we know at least 6, which is pretty standard.
Yeah.
That's good. Just a few more questions in regards to the product, and then we'll be heading off here. pricing models on the outlet and the smart plug. What is what, oh, and the dimmer. What are those range at? What are you looking for once they ship? I know, like I said, the Kickstarter kind of gave some of the people, the first backers, good deals on packages, things like that.
Yeah, when we launched on Kickstarter, we obviously wanted to reward our, earliest backers. If it weren't for our Kickstarter backers, we may not have continued moving forward because they're the ones that really validated that people wanted this product. I'll forever be indebted to those that, supported us before we had a product. That says a lot about that type of a customer because they want to see innovation come to market, and it really had a profound effect on me. I can't say enough about our backers. And even with the delay in our shipment, almost all of them have stayed with us. We've issued very few refunds to backers. Most of them really just needed to move on because they either built their house or were moving and no longer had a need for it. But we still get really positive comments from our backers saying we're doing the right thing by, building a solid product and not to rush it. That didn't really answer your question, though.
No,
So
but
we
it's good
launched
to know.
we launched the LightPad for $79 on Kickstarter. We're actually making a price adjustment right now, so I don't think you can order it anymore for $79. Now it's priced at $89. We will when we release it, it will most likely be at $99.
What about the outlets and the smart plugs? Similar
They'll be
pricing?
a little bit less.
Slightly less. All right. Now, second part to that question is, will there be any sort of dealer or distribution model? And if so, what are you looking for that right now?
Yeah, good. That's a great question. So, also, when we launched the Kickstarter campaign, we reached out to a lot of integrators and for early adopters and supporters, and we did get a tremendous amount of response from the integration community. And many of them supported our campaign. They ordered three light pads, and in return, we told them, you can buy at dealer pricing with no minimums. We just didn't know what that dealer pricing was yet, and we're not announcing that,
Just yet.
wholesale price yet, because we're still working. We're still working out details on final manufacturing and our supply chain, and trying to get the best pricing on materials that we can. But we will soon, and we'll reach out to those that did pre-order. We will most likely not be going through two-step distribution to start. We believe that the majority of our sales will go through a direct to consumer, and through the dealer base that we have established. And when we get closer to launch, we'll take a look at the number of dealers that already signed up, and but of course, if anybody's interested, of course, reach out to us. We want to talk to you and find out, what your interest is and what type of systems you install. We want to get great feedback from the integration community early because interoperability with other devices, I think, is important to the success.
Right, and it could help, shape the future of the product and where it goes, and feedback from the people who are installing it, etc.
That's right.
Well, that's actually great to know. For the most part, I think that pretty much covers a wide variety of the questions that I had, and I'm looking forward to actually all three of these products. I'd like to, once they're already available, install a few and play around myself and really kind of get into it. Like you said, it's an OPI API, so I mean, I could, all these different multi touches and like controlling other things, simple gestures, and the gesture itself is just awesome. Like I said, that may not be for everybody. $100 is kind of pricey in comparison to like your standard dimmer, but it's for what's inside. It makes sense. I do really think it's a brilliant idea, and I've been obviously following you guys since the very beginning and waiting for these things to launch.
Yeah, I appreciate your support. You've been great tweeting about us, and you've had me on a couple of different programs. So I appreciate you thinking about us. And as soon as we start our beta program, that you'll be one of the first to get your hands on one, so you can review it and tell us what you really think.
I'd love to. Last question here. We talked about earlier before we started the show that we talked about the Belkin Wemo outlet systems that got kind of hacked for security purposes, with all these devices being we talked about the Internet of Things and so connected, and what's stopping someone from going out in front of my house and hacking my light systems or whatever and taking things down and really messing with the homeowner end. How are you guys preventing something like that happening?
Yeah, it was unfortunate that that happened because connected home technologies is gaining such incredible momentum. Companies like Arm, Freescale, Motorola, Qualcomm—they're all betting the farm on the next frontier, which are connected devices.
Right.
Which is great for our industry. It doesn't matter if you're an integrator, installing, million-dollar control systems in homes, or if you are just starting out and hanging plasma, or flat panel TVs. I just dated myself. Did you see dust come out of my mouth when I said plasma?
Poof.
You're installing flat panel TVs and, a couple of in-wall speakers. It's going to benefit anybody in the entire supply chain as more devices become connected. The future of the connected home is exciting. In a few short years, we're going to see intelligent building material, and the technology will only proliferate further and further into the home. So it's critical that anybody that is currently providing services to consumers, I think CD has been talking about it for a while, own the network,
Yeah,
right?
right.
It is all about IP. If it scares you, or if you feel like you don't know enough about it, that's the number one thing you can do. Own the network, because every device, every node is going to be residing on that network, and there will be hundreds, if not thousands, of devices in the home communicating on that network. That being said, with hundreds or thousands of devices that are not only communicating with one another but communicating through the cloud, security and privacy are two critical areas that cannot be ignored. And so it was unfortunate when we heard the news about the Belkin Wemo. Something like 500,000 users could have been hacked, and it was a pretty basic vulnerability. And it really, hacking into something really only takes one guy somewhere in, Pomona, California, with nothing to do on a Friday night, and a bet, right, that they can get past it. And our CTO, Chris Weaver, recently wrote a really good response to that, and it was really about multiple layers of security are the only real answer. I'll paraphrase him here. I think he said something to the fact that, he's a West Texas native. He's a good old boy. Literally, when he went to school, he rode a horse. But the guy's brilliant. He was the lead engineer behind the Polycom View station. So if anybody, has ever done any video conferencing, you know that product. He has a high degree of domain knowledge in the area of IP-based control, connectivity, interoperability, and most importantly, security. So he said something to the effect that, if you're riding your horse in West Texas, that thorny bushes or stinging nettle won't stop you from riding a horse through a field. But if then you face thick mesquite and some poison ivy, most likely he's going to change his travel plans. So using multiple methods and multiple layers of security is the only good way to go about it, because they're going to get past one layer. There's no question. They might get past two layers, but once a hacker gets past a couple of layers and he realizes, oh, there's another box I've got to unwrap, they're just going to say, I'm going to go a different route. I'll go find something easier to do.
Right.
And that's really what it comes down to. Device to server communication has to be secure. Server authentication has to occur. You've got to protect and encrypt both transactional data, right? Turn my light on, and non-transactional data, is my light on? All of those things are a part of it. In fact, one of our plans is to literally host hackathons and challenge the developer and hacker community to break our stuff. Find a vulnerability, and you'll win the award, you know, and perhaps some type of a bounty, a sticker and a sandwich, or free product. You know what I mean? We'll reward them for helping us make a better product.
Right.
That's really the key to it.
Well, everyone, for if you're as excited as I am for this company Plum, which I feel could be the next part of Android at Home, and Google may acquire them sooner than you may think, you can pre-order these three devices if they haven't locked it up already, but soon enough, if you go to their website, which is just plumlife.com. That's www.plumlife.com. And if you want to check them out on Twitter, if that still exists, tomorrow, it's going to be at GetPlum. You could follow my friend Utz here at UTZBALDWIN. I believe that's correct spelling. I'm horrible with that. You can check them out on the Facebook at facebook.com/plumlife. And if you're on LinkedIn with the rest of us who may or may not be, check and follow their company. You got all their social feeds kind of like driving all the articles. They've been in made a lot of big waves in a short amount of time, and all this stuff is posted back there at linkedin.com/company/plum-life. They are a smallish Austin, Texas startup with making some big waves, and I think that they know what they're doing, and I strongly feel that they could, like I said, could be the next Nest. So check them out on the website. If people want to contact you guys direct, what's the best way about either have any questions in regards to technical support, or like I said, they want to become a dealer, who should they contact? What's the best method for doing something like that?
Well, we've got we're a team 11 strong now, very formidable team, but my door's always been open, and my email is ubaldwin@plumlife.com. You can send me a message directly, and I'll respond to you quickly or get the right person to respond to you.
Sounds great. It's been very, very informative, and I can't wait to get some of these devices in my home for beta testing purposes, and then do some reviews and may hopefully get the whole place online here.
And I promise you'll have one shortly after I do.
Sounds great. Thank you for your time, everyone. This has been another awesome episode of AV Insider. We'll talk to you guys soon, and hopefully by then we'll all have some smart dimmers, light pads, and be monitoring our outlets and energy usage and dimming from a distance. My name is John. If you guys want to follow me on the Twitter, as Utz mentioned, I'm very active there, so if you're not into tweeting a lot, don't do it. But it's at JMOTA3, JMOTA3, and this has been another episode of AV Insider. Catch you guys next time.